we've seen in the last year an additional 700 new AI applications in enterprises, and more than 50% of them are not managed. So what it means is that companies are widely using AI today. They are not managing all of them. And there are a few things for them to do that. And I was never on the mindset of we need to block anything, or no SaaS here, or no AI in the company, right? That's not how you should do that, because this is just pushing the shadow underground. So the way we approach that, and the way I think companies should manage this entire thing, is actually three things.
This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scaled. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I have a guest, Uri, with us. At the moment, he's in New Jersey. I'm in Austin, Texas. We were just talking about barbecue in Austin and how addictive it is. But now we are going to gearing toward a different discussion at SaaS Scaled. And Uri, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and the company, please.
Sure. Thanks, Armon. Happy to be here. I'm Uri. I'm CEO and founder of Tori. And my background is in IT and security. And honestly, Tori came out from pretty personal frustration. In my previous company, which I also co-founded, I was running operations, leading both product and engineering. And I was an early adopter, encouraged everyone to use the best tools, try latest technologies, move fast. And it worked great until we started growing. And the more people we hired, the more tools showed up. And at some point, I realized I had no idea I was actually running across the company. And I'd been the one who was pushing everyone to adopt. And then it stuck with me. Every fast-growing company hits that wall. So we built Tori to give enterprise real visibility and control into their entire software ecosystem. What's being used by whom, with what access and what cost. And we're seeing in the data, it's the same trend that we see now with AI and what's going on with software and SaaS.
Fantastic. There is a big question in the mind of people, everyone now trying to figure out AI and how to approach it, how to use it. Some people look at it more as a software. Some people look at it more like a human kind of entity, and they believe that it will become more like human in the future, not really being a software. It's created by software, but the nature may not be software the way it performs. And how would you really describe it? How would you ask people to approach AI and use it as a tool, as a productivity tool, use it as a kind of, different type of entity. And when you talk to people and when you talk to companies and your own company, how do you think about the way we should approach AI?
I think in the first part is I encourage everyone to embrace AI. And I think every founder should embrace AI in the different industries that they are, the different roles. Everyone in the company has what to improve in their line of work and their profession using AI. So that's something that I try across the board from probably late 2022 when GPT 3.5 came out. That was my first introduction to generative AI. Since then, it's been a long ride. So for me, everyone should use it. We're in an amazing time. But at the same time, it comes with a lot of challenges and new risk that we need to manage, but also a lot of opportunities.
Now, when you know we talk about really all of these technologies, including AI, many people think that it's the same as many other technology waves, I would say, right? So the internet came as a wave, and then cloud came as a wave, and now we have AI. Is it the way you think as well, or do you think this is different? This is not going to be close even to the other waves. It's a different type of change that we are going to make. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's different. So I think AI is a new type of technology that some of it is being utilized in software. Some software are completely wrapping AI or involved with AI. We see also the foundation models that are adding more and more of the application layer to them, right? And so the line is becoming a little bit more blurred of what software actually is, what is SaaS, what is not SaaS. But it doesn't really matter in some ways for how you manage all these different tools in your company, because at the end of the day, it's some kind of enterprise software, right? If it's on-prem or SaaS, if it's an AI tool, if it's consumption, or if it's a seats, or it's something that someone vibe coded internally, or you use credit card to buy it, it's something that require management. And the idea is that there is some kind of tool that makes the company more efficient. And that's, I think, something that is connecting everything that we see with AI and traditional SaaS, or even before SaaS when you had on-prem, or still companies that has on-prem. It is all kind of different software that the company is using.
When I go to your website, the very first sentence I see on your website, it says the governance platform for SaaS and AI, right? So so you provide that kind of technology for companies, probably in a centralized way to manage SaaS, to manage AI. Now, AI is at the very earliest stage, and many companies, probably individuals, are just adopting AI on their own, even might be just their personal account, and just trying to, you know, understand it, play with it, see how it works. And now we have OpenClaw that even, you know, some people run it locally as kind of agent and just play with it. You may not even understand, or you may not even know some of the works that OpenClaw is doing, because it may look like the person is doing those kind of things. So do you see that now the time that companies have to have that centralized policy and then bring everyone in a kind of more manageable environment? And if they don't do it, and they let individuals really decide how they want to utilize AI and essentially recruit AI as their own assistant, what is the drawback on that? Because they can definitely move faster if they do that and let just individuals go ahead and just hire AI agents as their assistant and boost the productivity. What is the drawback if they do that?
Yeah. So I think it's exactly how we've seen the SaaS sprawl 10 years ago. And this is what brought us to StarTory, right? So you had the SaaS started exploding, and people were just signing up to tools from the browser, starting to use them. and nobody knew about these tools that are being used. And then it started to grow and grow. And each one of them was, in a way, helpful. And we see the same thing with AI now. So AI is already widespread across the organization. It's not always sanctioned. So what I mean by that we've seen in the last year, an additional 700 new AI applications in enterprises. And more than 50% of them are not managed. So what it means is that companies are widely using AI today. They are not managing all of them. And there are a few things for them to do that. And I was never on the mindset of we need to block anything. Or no SaaS here or no AI in the company, right? That's not how you should do that, because this is just pushing the shadow underground. So the way we approach that and the way I think companies should manage this entire thing is actually three things. One, they need to get visibility before anything else, right? You cannot govern what you cannot see, which most teams I talk to are surprised, sometimes shocked, when they thought they have 200 apps, but then they have 800. The next one is to have the controls in place. And controls are no like blanket bans or no AI tools allowed here. As I mentioned, they're just pushing it, the shadow, even farther, and people will use it. And the reasons that people are using it is not bad. Most of them are trying to be more efficient, more productive, and so there's good on all these shadow and things that you are not aware of. Instead, you need to understand which AI tools are approved, what data flow into them, who has access to what, and how long do the permission last, right? And that makes it a default. The last thing is to automate the heavy lifting, right? When you have 800 tools in the company and 40 apps per employee, you need to automate workflows, right? When a new app is being adopted, to flag it, to ask the person to know how they're using it, and so on. And now there is the new types of software AI. If you think about vibe coding, so you might have 100 projects in your company that were vibe coded, and 50 of them are connected to your traditional SaaS system. Some connected to Salesforce, other to HubSpot, one to Zoom. And so all of these should be treated in that way. Mm-hmm. So it's a mindset shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally different way for people to really think about AI at this time. Now, AI is changing very rapidly, as you mentioned. You mentioned 2002, not long time ago. But when you think about the output that you get from AI, everyone probably would share the same experience that we have, that you could get probably a different result just 6 months ago, a year ago, than today. Today, you go there and just, you get a very good output. Maybe last year, you could work with these AI tools and you could say, well, this is still at the very earliest stage. I don't know how long does it take to get there. But then it was surprising to all of us how fast it got to the point that we have now, right? So when you use it today, you are really at a totally different scale, at different intelligence level. The output is really good. It's almost like, you know, you are talking to the most intelligent person that you know. When you really talk about different topics, it can really do a very nice job very quickly and provide you the consulting you need. It's still not perfect, but much better than it used to be. What is the impact of that, especially when it comes to coding, when it comes to SaaS, from the way you have experienced it? How do you see it can impact us in the software world?
Yeah, I think, and I've seen it probably three main milestones, at least for me personally, with AI. So one of them, I told you, that's 3.5, when that was released, that was when generative AI really started. And then some of it was weird, some of it was not good, some of it still was amazing. The second one was in late 2024 when vibe coding really took the next level. When people that are not, you had some vibe coding before, but people that are not coders could start creating software. Never mind if it's the quality of production or not, but it's getting to a different level. And that's that. And the last milestone, that was late 2025, when Claude Code and Opus 4.5 really started to be the real agents that everybody talked about in 2025. Now you have OpenClaw that is maybe part of that shift, but I see both that if you think about SaaS, we started building AI, generative AI features in 2023. It was nice, experimental. 2024, some of these features became, 2025, some of these features became really much more interesting. End of 25 and starting 26, that's really when agentic AI is starting to become a thing. So we see it with Salesforce, you see it with HubSpot now, that are becoming kind of headless CRM or something around it. And that's a completely shift of some of the most known SaaS or what you imagine as a SaaS, right? And so on one hand, you have many more tools that are using these amazing capabilities. And on the other hand, you see some kind of morphing. The SaaS tools are being morphed into something new, right? At least those that are taking doing these changes. So I think we're going to see SaaS tools that are changing. Some of them will die or swallowed into a model or another tool. You're going to see a lot more tools that we don't know or does not exist today or could not exist before. Right, vibe coding tools could not exist in 2020. And this is a completely new category. And these are some of the changes. Agentic is also something that changed in the models. The models became greater and greater in giving us answers, but now they're becoming greater and greater in taking actions and decisions. And that changes everything.
So with this AI software applications now being available for all of us to use, and you mentioned agentic AI, how do you see that, for example, the users using the software would change? Because we have humans using the software, and it will continue, I think, for humans to be utilizing the software applications and SaaS applications, but also we are going to see increasingly more digital workers, AI agents, using the software. So I have to believe that the usage of the software will increase, especially because AI agents are much faster and they are going to utilize software at a totally different pace, faster pace, either APIs or just software through the UI or in any form and shape that is optimized for them. And also humans continue to use software, maybe a little bit less, but the usage that maybe humans use less, but then AI agents would use the software more. At the end, the way I personally see it is software is going to be used more, not less. And maybe not all of the software applications, but many of those still are needed for AI agents or for humans. Do you see it differently, that the way software is going to be utilized and is going to be used in the future?
No, I totally agree with you. I think we also going to interact less and less with user interfaces and more with agents. And OpenClaw is probably a snapshot into how it's going to look, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about Notion, for example, right? When you used to create a page in Notion, now pages are either created automatically by some workflow from your script on Zoom, and then it's going to tell OpenClaw, create a summary for me and add a project to that and send it to these and these people. and you interact in Notion, but not exactly in Notion, as a wiki, I mean. And so there are a lot of new behaviors that we're going to see that we don't really know how to work this way. And these are things, obviously, that the you mentioned earlier, that technology now with AI is moving much, much faster than we've seen before, right? Every week you have a jaw-dropping announcement from one of the AI companies. And this is like that for 2 years now. It's not that once in a while. Every week you're just, oh my God, this model can do that. Or now they introduce this kind of feature and now Claude Design and then OpenClaw. And everything is adopted in speeds that we've never seen before. And you've seen it with OpenClaw, the most, the fastest and most adopted Git repo in history. And because these things are really transformational. And in the security domain, we also call it non-human identity, right? Mm-hmm. So something from our domain, if you think about identity management, you used to manage the people in the company. Who has access to what, right? Employee joined, you have onboarding, offboarding, you give them access, you have Okta, single sign-on, and all these kind of things. And you had system accounts, right? Maybe you created a system accounts in Salesforce. And that was kind of a non-human identity. But today, there are much more flavors of non-human identity, and it's all across the company everywhere. So every agentic workflow that you create is now some kind of identity. You can take decision maybe, and that might be on Zapier or on A10. It's not like a traditional workflow. And it has access to systems. And then you have an agent that is running CodeWise or OpenClaw or Claude, or every kind of integration becomes an identity. And you have a token on API on OpenAI that can do something, and a few more tokens on 11 labs. And it's all over the place. So non-human identities are also one of the biggest risks that company needs to change the mindset of how we are managing these things. And I agree with you that these will be using software much more. And if you ask me, if you think of a company, if you look at a company and you say, how many human identities there are in the company, how many non-human identities in a year from now, the non-human identities will be much larger than the human identities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yeah. I see. I agree. I see, you know, digital teams are being created as we speak, and the number of, and I don't know, at one point, perhaps either we will have the extension of LinkedIn for non-humans or a brand new LinkedIn just for AI agents and digital workers to really just, you know, be there and introduce themselves and what they do and communicate and answer questions. So that would be interesting to see such a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see it. There was, you've seen Moldbook, you know, Moldbook, like the Facebook for agents, that when OpenClaw came out, there was a kind of like Reddit for agents. So there's definitely might be some LinkedIn, but there are the similars. Like if you have now places for skills and things that agents can learn that are not exactly LinkedIn for agents, but almost the same if you think about it. Like this, mm-hmm. I can take this specialty, I can take from here or learn from there. And each one has their own rating. My skill is better for using that part, or that skill is better for helping your agent. It's fascinating and very different from everything we knew before.
Interesting. Yeah, as you said, it's just, you know, there is no shortage of these new innovations happening around AI, and the news we receive almost every month, something that, you know, hey, I didn't expect this one, or this happened so soon, and I expected this to happen 2 years from now, but it's kind of accelerating. That's amazing. Let me ask you a random question as well. So out of all of the cities that you have been traveling around the globe and you have seen, which one is your favorite that you would say, this city, I like it so much. Whenever I get a time, I would like to go there and spend some weeks there.
Oh, okay. I would say my favorite city Austin is definitely up there. But probably Amsterdam.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful city.
Love Amsterdam. It's very cozy and feel good. And it's a combination of small and yet very modern and advanced.
Yeah, each Austin and Amsterdam, both of them are unique in a different way, but they have that characteristics that make them differentiated from many other cities.
Yeah,
good choices. Thank you for sharing that. And I would like to also ask you as my last question, if there is any book or publication that you liked it very much, either professionally or personally, and you say, oh, I would like to share this with other people as well, the audience, in case they like it too.
If there was one book, there is a book that I read for the first time a very long time ago, and it's not new, but sometimes I read it back again. And every year I find myself recommending it once or twice for people that actually really need it. Mm-hmm. And that's Getting Things Done, which is a lot of how I live my life. But that's an amazing framework.
Okay, fantastic. Whom do you recommend this book to? Is it more for people who manage a business or lead a business, for everyone, for, you know, techies, non-techies, or do you think everyone can benefit from this book?
I think it's for everyone, but especially if you are a founder or an executive and you start to do more and more and you feel that you are chasing everything that you do and your RAM is getting too crowded. That's part of the thing in the thinking there. Is that's definitely something that's going to help you manage multiple tasks, multiple projects at once, everything when you have a very, very busy schedule.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was great speaking with you. And thanks again for joining us at SaaScaled.
Thank you very much, Armand. Great speaking to you too.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.